Recovery Today on UKHealthRadio.com. Join me and my guests on this voyage of recovery and discovery.
Well, hello everyone. Hi, my name is Jim Smith and welcome to Recovery Today. Not just any show of Recovery Today, this happens to be my 20th edition of this series of programs. So, you know, that's pretty good, because I was just saying to my guest, actually, you know, when I was asked to start this project, it seemed a mountain, you know, but I suppose, you know, I try and live my life a day at a time. And in a similar way, I thought, well, it's a week at a time. You know, I've finally got to 20. So here we are. And I've got a wonderful guest today. I met my guest in South Africa a few years ago. He lives here permanently now. And his name is Lee Fernandez. So I'm just going to ask Lee to, you know, just introduce himself and just to talk a bit about his beginnings. Okay, over to you, Lee.
Thanks, Jim. My beginnings are started in South Africa, in a place called Durban.
Durban.
Yeah, it was a lovely place.
Yes.
Originally, my parents are from Cape Town, and my mom and her family from Cape Town, and then my dad, he was originally born in Portugal, and when we were about 4 years old, him and the whole family moved to Sweden.
Right.
Then from Sweden, they moved another track all the way to Rhodesia.
Wow.
And from Rhodesia, they moved to South Africa.
Yeah.
So it's been quite a journey. So I have a bit of, from my mom's side, I have a bit of Irish and Scottish descent.
Mm.
And then my dad is a bit Portuguese and Swedish.
Mm.
So I'm a child of the world, as they say.
You grew up and went to school in South Africa?
Yes. So in Durban, I started off, I used to go to pre-primary school, like a nursery school.
Really?
Yeah, it was called
Pinocchio. Oh, yeah.
That was really good when my mom started working.
Yeah.
Me and my brother went there for a while. And then eventually I started school at a place called Glenwood Junior.
Mm.
And then I progressed to a place called Parkview,
which is
middle school, I think, here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my high school was at a place called Glenwood High School.
Glenwood, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a nice upbringing, you know. Mm. There's a lot of trees and a lot of space. South Africa is a very big place.
It is, yeah. You know?
Unfortunately, I was brought up in apartheid, you know.
Oh, of course, yes, yeah. Yes.
So, you know, for a group of people, it was very bad.
Yes,
you know.
But,
you know, being a child, I didn't really know that.
No.
You don't really know what's going on.
No.
You know, you just walk around and you think everything is just the way it is.
Yeah, of course you do.
You know?
You do. Yeah.
But it was good.
Yeah, I remember because I grew up in this country, you know, in South London, and I remember looking at a Life magazine.
Mm.
This was in the 60s. I was in my teens, and there was a feature on South Africa, and there was I think it was Cape. Well, no, I don't know which city it was. It was a big railway station, and there were like hundreds of black commuters just literally shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of fenced off, and there were white Europeans, there were about seven of them, kind of in this big space.
And yeah.
I remember thinking, wow, you know.
It was terrible that it happened. I remember there was a concert for Mandela, I think, in the UK sometime to raise awareness and money.
Yeah.
And I remember friends of ours actually they got a video copy.
Oh, wow.
And they brought it, they came in to visit.
Yes.
And remember those old VHS machines?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, of course, yeah.
So we watched it, but you know, my parents, we closed all the curtains.
Yes.
And the sound was very low, because if someone had to find out, we would have been in a lot of trouble.
Trouble.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was bad for a lot of people, unfortunately.
Of course.
And I think, you know, for me, the school that I was at, Glenwood, were very progressive. And what they did the last couple of years I was at school, we actually said that it was wrong. We started letting people in of all races, you know. So that was good, you know. Our motto, if I remember correctly, is Nahil Humani Elyon, which means mankind is in our interest.
That's wonderful. Yeah,
so it was really good.
So, yeah, so, you know, growing up in that environment was very unique, really. And so the older you, did you have any visions or aims, you know, what you wanted to do in life?
Oh, yeah. So when I was a kid,
yeah.
I did want to do some things. I wanted to be a archaeologist.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that. You know, I loved history.
Yeah, sure.
And I loved, like, the pyramids.
Yeah.
And I just found, you know, culture and stuff very interesting.
Sure, yeah.
And I always thought when I was a youngster, I thought I'd definitely like to be an archaeologist and discover different things.
Yes.
And figure out how people did things and how people thought and,
yes.
and that kind of stuff.
Mm.
You know, that was definitely on my list.
Yeah.
You know.
And what did happen when you left school?
So if we go back a little bit. Yeah, so if we go back. So I did start, you know, my, you know, I felt a little bit disconnected when I was younger, Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I had a good upbringing, you know, my parents did the best they could.
Yeah, sure.
You know, without a doubt.
Yeah.
But there was just something that just felt like a bit empty.
Yeah, I know.
And I think when I was about 12 or 13, I started that, you know, the process of experimenting with alcohol.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that progressed for a period of time, you know. And then what happened was my dad had left to go to Cape Town to leave, and it did affect me quite a bit.
And I started
becoming a bit withdrawn, and I started drinking a bit more heavily and getting into a bit more trouble, you know. So my mom, you know, did the best. She just thought, you know, we got to sort something out.
Yeah.
So what we did was I went to go see a psychologist, you know, just to see what was going on with me.
Yeah.
And then my marks deteriorated as well, so I stayed back a year. And then, you know, the final year of school, well, not the final year, but the year I stayed back, I did really well.
Yeah.
You know, I did really well academically. I was playing rugby, and I was a very successful rugby player. I made it to schools,
which is
very, very prestigious.
Sure. And, you know,
it was really, really good.
Yeah.
Things were really looking really, really fantastic.
Mm.
And then what happened was that we went to go see my dad down in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And then on a bus. And then we came back on the 11th of January.
Yes.
1994.
Yeah.
And the bus went off a three-story bridge.
Yeah.
And there were 44 on the bus and 15 were killed.
Good.
You know? And my brother was one of them, unfortunately. Oh,
yes.
So that was tough, you know what I mean?
Cool.
And I broke my back.
Yeah, yeah.
I crushed two birds atop my spine.
Mm.
I broke my hands. I had other, you know, life-threatening injuries.
Mm.
And my life was just pretty rubbish.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, the best thing I can say. It was a massive loss. I was told not to play rugby anymore.
Mm.
So those dreams that I had,
you
know, were sort of going away.
Yeah.
And obviously my brother had passed. And, I just didn't know what to do, you know. It was very, 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 very tough time for myself and the whole family,
And you were how old at this time, Lee?
So I was, I think I was 17 at the time.
Mm.
I think I was 17, 16 or 17.
Mm.
So I was going to be leaving. That was my last year.
Yeah.
You know, there was a good chance I would have, you know, played rugby and done quite well in that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I had got two scholarships the year before to go to university, which I couldn't take up because I was going to be at school. So things were, before that, they were looking very, I thought they were looking pretty good.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, life happens and things happen.
That's right.
And there's nothing you can't do about what happens, but, you know. What can you do? You've got to move on somewhere along the line.
I mean, your first choice of music is really saying that, isn't it?
Yeah, because I thought that would be it. Not so fantastic, but I thought I was a bit resigned to what was going to happen, you know, unfortunately.
Do you want to say a bit about this song?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, I'm in recovery, but I was using drugs.
Yeah.
You know, and drinking alcohol, and especially my brother passed away, you know, that became very more pronounced.
Mm.
But I suppose I got to a stage where I thought, you know, that would be it.
Yeah.
I was resigned to, this is my life. There's nothing I can do.
No.
A bit of victim mentality.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, but at the end of the song, he's got a little line and says, but don't you believe them?
Don't you believe them, yeah.
And that there's always hope somewhere along the line. Thank you.
job. The man in the silk suit hurries by as he catches the poor old lady's eyes. Just for fun, he says, get a job. That's just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. Ah, but don't you believe them. Said, hey, little boy, you can't go where the others go. You don't look like they do. Said, hey, old man, how can you stand to think that way? And did you really think about it before you made the rules? He said, son, that's just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. Oh, but don't you believe that?
Okay, well, that was Bruce Hornsby and The Range singing The Way It Is. And, yeah, we were just talking during, you know, when that record was playing, that how there's little things that happen in life, Lee, you know, that could be passed as coincidences, but, you know, sometimes it's overwhelming, isn't it, how they keep cropping up, these so-called coincidences.
Yeah.
And... yeah, so there you were. This is so, yeah, well, so talk us through, you know, after that terrible event, and did your drinking and drugging increase after that?
Yeah, so you know, I always found it quite challenging, you know, to deal with my feelings.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
As a young man, you know, you know, boys don't cry.
That's right.
Let, you know, don't express anything.
Mm.
But if you get angry, that's okay. you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You know? Yeah.
And I think, you know, with the passing of my brother, I didn't know how to deal with any of those feelings.
No.
It was really, really difficult.
Mm.
So what I did was I medicated myself,
yeah,
which I know now.
Mm.
You know, so the last year of school was quite difficult.
Mm.
You know, my mom was my dad was living in Cape Town, obviously.
Yeah.
And my mom was going through a tough time. She just lost a son.
Yes.
Another son had broken his back. And then, you know, I was told not to play rugby, but I still had this dream, you know. And what I did against the wishes and interest of my GP and whatnot, I played.
You played.
I still played, which was not the best thing to do.
No.
I was a front ranker. I was a number one. That was my number.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I played for a while, but then I was in a scrum and, you know, I took this guy out of the scrum.
Yeah.
But my back just was painful. And I fell down and that was it. They took me off. I hobbled off.
Mm.
And I remember my mom was there, actually. She was watching.
Yeah.
But I was still quite adamant I wanted to play. So even when I left school, I still tried to make an attempt to play.
Sure.
And then eventually it was a couple of years after that I went to go see a specialist.
Yes.
And he was just very direct.
Mm.
And he was, Lee, you could play rugby.
Mm. Mm.
But he said front rankers who play rugby, who have backs that are not injured, end up in wheelchairs.
Yeah.
And he said you can either take a bad tackle and he said at the end of the day, it's just not worth it. You know what I mean? So
no, that's right.
Yeah. So I mean, I held on to it for quite a long time.
Yeah.
I won't lie.
Yeah.
But eventually, I did have to let it go.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, like you asked, the drinking and drugging, you know, it continued. And and what I did was, you know, I had to find some work.
Mm.
So I did the really clever idea of working as a doorman, security.
Yes.
I thought that'd be a great idea. You know what I mean?
Clubs, mainly clubs,
some casinos,
yeah.
And obviously there was a lot of access to drugs, and alcohol, and you know, I was probably hanging around with people that I shouldn't have been hanging out with, and I was consuming a lot of these substances because I just didn't know what to do.
And that
happened for quite a long time, and I think I was about. It happened for a good couple of years, and then I think somewhere before my 20th birthday was the first time I was introduced to treatment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And in what form did that take? Was it?
It happened. It came out. Mm. I think I told my mom. I said, "I've, you know, unfortunately, I've been using drugs.
Yeah.
You know, I need some help."
Yeah,
I think I'm. I think I phoned her. That's right. I'd been out long night, unfortunately, or a couple of days, and I phoned her. Mm. I think, and she said, "You know, come home." And I was like, "Yeah." And then all of a sudden, the fear kicked in, and I got more drugs, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then eventually, when I finished those, I remember I got dropped off in a place called Breer Road, and I walked home.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, "What's going on? And you know, what drugs are you using?" And I didn't tell her all the truth, unfortunately.
No.
I just told her certain bits.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then, I went and I didn't even go into treatment. I was quite dishonest.
Mm.
And I didn't tell them it was like really bad.
Mm.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But what I did was I went to an aftercare program.
Oh, right.
For a period of time.
Yeah.
So they were keen just to throw me in.
Sure.
They said, you know, let's just do this, whatever it is. So it was a place up there. I actually volunteered there later on for a couple of years, which is really nice. So it was abstinence based, and it was more like therapeutic and life skills and things like that. So I did that for a while.
Mm.
You know, I was there for about 5 or 6 weeks, maybe a bit longer, I can't remember. But then, you know, I thought I'd just go and try one of these and one of those.
Yes.
And unfortunately, those ones became lots.
Sure.
You
know?
And my way didn't work.
No.
Much to my surprise.
Did that bring you, obviously brought you closer to your final, you know, point?
Yes.
You know, we talk about a rock bottom or deflation at depth, whatever. Yeah.
So I went to that treatment center for a period of time.
Yeah.
And then I just went back to, you know, people say relapse, but it was just, I just went back to using.
Yeah, that's what I was just yeah, using. I'm glad you mentioned that because I, because listeners, yeah, a lot of people say, oh, I relapsed. And in a lot of cases, they mean they just resume drinking and drugging.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a relapse normally means after a period of some recovery.
Yeah, and then normally it's normally a one-time deal.
That's it.
And then they get back on track.
Sure.
So it wasn't a one-time deal.
No,
and then it was just back to addiction.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, yeah.
So that worked for a while. I remember I was still working some security.
Yeah.
But then when I thought, you know, the adult clubs are not the thing. I'll try some like under 18 clubs.
Yeah.
And I got unfortunately fired from one because I was intoxicated and high, which is, you know.
Yeah.
But I suppose unfortunately it just shows the madness where I really didn't care.
No.
You know, I just wanted to do my thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this happened for a period of time. And then eventually, you know, it got to a stage where, you know, I was getting into a lot of trouble. Mm. You know, I wasn't doing much besides, you know, drugs and whatnot. And then I'd been out, I think, on the Wednesday or the Tuesday, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home and then I felt like I needed some more, so I left, unfortunately. And then I came back and my mom was really upset and then I did it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this last time, you know, she came downstairs and she was there and I said, I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this massive argument, terrible argument.
Yeah.
And I went, you know, I went down to do my thing. And I remember I'd been in a fight that night. I don't recall.
No.
My ear was full of blood.
Yeah.
And I remember being downstairs and the guy was upstairs.
Mm.
And I had like this court and I thought, oh, this is the life. This is what I want.
Yeah.
You know? And anyway, I went upstairs and I, you know, I was doing my thing. And and these guys left.
Mm.
You know, they left. And to get into their place, there was a gate, and then another gate, and another gate, and then it was barbed wire all the way around. This it was a three-story apartment.
Yeah,
and they left, you know.
Mm.
And you know, obviously, you start to come down, and the insanity was like I didn't know what was going on, and I needed something to medicate myself.
Yeah,
I had nothing,
and
what happened was, you know, that they speak about just having a moment where everything becomes very clear.
That's right.
You know, a moment of clarity, I've heard people
say. Yeah, that's it.
You know?
Yeah.
And for me, what it told me was that my addiction is my prison.
Yeah.
Because I was in prison. And what I realized that if I kept on doing what I was doing, I could be with different people.
Mm.
I could be using different substances.
Yeah.
But I'd always end up in the same place.
That's right.
In my head.
Yeah.
With myself.
That's right.
And I was...
Yeah.
That is not a nice place to be.
No, it's not.
You know
not.
What I mean?
No.
It was really, really not good for me.
No.
And eventually I managed to get a key, I think the next morning sometime.
Yeah.
Got out.
Yeah.
I was so grateful. And I got home.
Mm.
And my mom, you know, disappeared for a couple of days, unfortunately, again. Because I was just about me. And she was, you know, you're going to do something. You're going to sort yourself out. And I said, I'll sort myself out like tomorrow. And she was, you're going to go to treatment. And I was like, I didn't even argue with that. I fell down. I just remember crying. I was sobbing.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, whatever you want me to do, because I want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I did. I think that was the Friday.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine actually, he invited me to a wedding on the Saturday.
Mm.
And, you know, there were beers and, you know, it was a Christian wedding, but, you know, they weren't hooligans, but.
Yeah.
And I could have very easy just, you know, had one. And I was like,
no,
I'm done.
Fantastic.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just done, you know.
That's right.
You get to that stage where it doesn't work anymore.
No.
No matter whatever you want it to work, it does not work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And on the Sunday, I was in treatment.
You were in treatment.
I was in treatment.
Yeah. You went into treatment, Lee, and that was for how long?
So I went for the 28-day program.
Yeah.
That they had.
That's right.
So it was abstinence-based, which was good.
Yeah.
And it was 12-step-based, which is called the Minnesota model.
That's right.
So they had a lot of, you know, they had a bit of art therapy in the morning, which I quite liked.
Yeah.
I still got the little things that I made, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. I still got them. I haven't painted it yet. Still got to paint it a number of years later.
Yeah.
And we used to do walks in the morning, and we used to do some meditations as well.
Mm.
And there was a lot of work, you know. But But I was still, you know, I knew I didn't want to use, but I didn't want to do any work either.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was quite scared of what might happen.
Yes.
And I was still a bit scared of my feelings and just being able to process things, you know. Mm. And so I was there for 10 days and, you know, they have group therapy.
Yes, yes.
And,
that's right.
You know, some stuff came up during the week.
Yeah.
And everyone was talking. So I was talking a little bit.
Mm.
But I was very, my psychologist said, you're very monotonely.
Yeah.
There was nothing going on.
No, nothing going on.
And, you know, if you're there for like 10, 11 days, if you're participating, then you can get certain privileges.
Yeah.
You know, which is good.
It's good.
And I refused to participate. And I had this big fight with him. I laugh now. It wasn't so funny at the time. We had a really big argument, and I was, you know, screaming. He was, you need to calm down. I was like, don't tell me what to do. And I remember he said, you need to do some stuff. You need to start accessing your feelings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. Mm. And then I remember I went to my dorm where I was, or the room.
Yeah.
And I just cried, man, by myself. And I was like, and I had another moment where, you know, you either do something different or it's going to be exactly the same.
Exactly, yeah, you know? That's right.
And I remember we had group, I think, that week.
Yeah.
And they were talking about things, and I couldn't hold it back anymore. All those feelings, you know.
That's right.
You know, my brother dying and not being able to play rugby and all this stuff.
You were full of feelings.
I was full of feelings. And, you know, I just burst out crying.
Yeah.
Burst out crying. I remember, you know, B was the other psychologist, and she was like, why are you crying? I was like, I don't know. And I just couldn't stop sobbing, you know. But having said that, it was a turning point
in
my life, my recovery.
Yeah.
And
And
I started to participate.
Yeah.
And I started to just do some of these suggestions that they said. And the rest of it was a very pleasant experience. And, you know, just speaking to other people, you know, other recovering addicts.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Recovering alcoholics.
Yeah.
You know, I got to connect on a lovely level.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing, for the listeners who haven't been in rehab, it's an incredible time in one's life, isn't it? That you spend time with other people from other parts of society, different ages, but it becomes like a family.
Yeah, no, it does.
It's very, you know, close-knit connections with people.
And also because I found it quite challenging to connect with other people.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I just let all my guards down.
That's it.
And I was, okay, these people, they saw me, I suppose, at my worst. I put inverted commas because I was tearful and emotional.
Yeah.
And they didn't reject me. They didn't say, you need to leave. They were like, that's good for you.
That's it.
Do some more of that.
That's it. Yeah.
And it was challenging, and it was difficult at times, but it was definitely worth doing it because it did completely change things for me.
And how long ago was that, Lee?
That was 18 years ago.
Yeah. 18 years, and I believe you've just celebrated a recovery birthday.
Yes, I did about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you're 18.
Yeah. 18, yeah. It's quite weird. I phoned a friend of mine who got clean a day before me.
Yeah.
She's in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I phoned her up on her day, and I was like, this is weird. And she said, it is weird, you know, because when you start on the journey, you don't think, you think a month would be amazing.
Yeah, you do.
2 months, you think, oh my goodness. And
that's right.
You see other people who have, you know, some time, you think, how do you do that?
I know.
It's really, really amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And life is completely different.
Oh, yes.
You know?
It is.
It's wonderful.
It is.
Mm.
It's a new. It just happens to be my oldest daughter's birthday on today, May the 20th.
Oh, wow.
Happy birthday,
Mel. Happy birthday, sure.
And I put an old photo on Facebook when she was 5 and I was 40. I put in brackets, I was 12 years into my new life. And
wow.
It was a new life. Of course, it is. Still is a new life. It's
every day.
Every day. Yeah, every day.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, let's look at your second choice, shall we, of music?
So it's the Streets of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
By Bruce Springsteen. There's a bit of a story to this.
Yeah, I'd like you to tell the listeners.
So, I was stuck in this drug dealer's house for like a day.
Yeah.
And eventually, I got out, and I was walking home, and I told you I'd been in this fight before, which I have no recollection.
Yeah.
And I walked past this mirror of the shop. I looked in the mirror and I looked at myself and I was a mess.
You know,
I hadn't slept, blood in my ear, no idea what had happened.
Yeah.
And the song, The Streets of Philadelphia, you know, these lyrics came into my head, you know. Yeah. I was bruised and battered.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I felt. I was unrecognizable to myself. And sure. I was like, that's insane. You know what I mean?
That's yeah.
And the funny thing is you know, I went to a gathering of friends in Philadelphia in 2013.
And
I didn't really realize that.
Yeah.
But, you know, all those things that I thought I didn't know, they weren't there anymore. I had a good idea of who I was.
That's right.
You know, I had a good life.
Yeah.
I know what I felt.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, as a South African.
Yes.
I'm not talking for everyone else, but for me, I'm like a little country boy, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And being able to travel. I wouldn't have never thought a number of years later actually be walking on the streets of Philadelphia. Yeah, amazing stuff.
That's a lovely story. So here's The Boss with Streets of Philadelphia. Thank you, Bruce Springsteen. Marvellous song called Streets of Philadelphia, and a marvellous story, Lee, you know. Right, well, 18 years, we've got about 10 minutes. How do we compress? But you've had a new life, a different life. Do you want just give a summary to the listeners about what's happened and, you know, high spots?
High spots and low spots.
Low spots.
Well, You know, when I was in treatment, I'd actually studied a business degree.
Yeah.
I had. I had one. They let me out of treatment to go write one exam. It was my last exam.
Yeah.
You know, I completed that, and I wasn't too sure what I wanted to do.
Mm.
But I had this feeling that I wanted to, you know, help people.
Sure, yeah.
So I had to do some extra studies.
Yes.
You know, and then eventually, you know, I finished an honors degree in psychology.
Yeah,
Which was wonderful.
That's great.
I tried to get into a master's program in South Africa.
Yes.
You know, to become a psychologist.
Yeah.
So I did that for a while, I applied for 3 years, you know, and I had a first class honors degree.
Yeah.
I'd been working in a treatment center for a period of time, volunteering.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get in, I went to go see the professor.
Yeah.
So I applied the first year at universities in my area.
Mm.
And then the year after I applied all over the country. And I actually went to go see a professor at one of these universities. I'm not going to get political.
No.
But obviously, you know, South Africa was apartheid.
Yes, of course.
And you know, they've got affirmative action policies now.
Yes.
You know, to make things right, which were wrong.
Sure. The way it is, I understand. Yeah.
And, you know, he said, unfortunately, you have everything. But he said, you know, the policies in place now, you know, they don't favor you, Lee.
No.
That was fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the time, I was a bit upset.
Sure, of course.
Which is normal.
Yeah.
But, you know, someone else had said, you know, why don't you apply overseas?
Yeah.
You know, to the UK somewhere, so I did that and I applied. I got a position at the University of Leeds.
Yeah, yeah.
And the University of Kent. And then, and the last one I got was at London South Bank.
Right,
And then, you know, that was what I did. You know, I left South Africa.
Yeah.
And I came here to study.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Which I completed in 2014.
So you've done your master's in psychology?
Yes, addiction psychology.
Addiction psychology.
In counseling.
Yes. Yeah. Especially, yeah.
So that's been wonderful.
Yes.
You know? And those 3 years that I was looking for, you know, places, I met a young lady.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got engaged and eventually got married. You know?
Wonderful, yeah.
Well, it was wonderful at the time.
Of course.
but sometimes things don't work out the way you want them to work out.
Right.
And, you know, we just got divorced a couple of years ago.
Okay, yeah.
You know, well, finalized last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, you know, people say it was the wrong decision, the right decision. But the thing is, you know, I think...
Bruce Hornsby.
Bruce Hornsby.
You know, that's the way it is.
You know,
yeah.
I don't think anyone starts a relationship wanting to end it.
No, you know, of course not.
But sometimes things just don't work out the way you want them
to. They don't. No.
You know? You know, getting married was the best decision at the time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, ending it was the best decision at the time as well.
Sure. Yeah. No, I understand that. Yeah.
So that has been interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I've been working in different treatment settings.
Yeah.
Which has been really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been able to give back.
Yeah.
You know, I worked in a couple of treatment centers in London, which has been really nice.
Yeah.
And I worked in Brixton Prison.
Yes, yes.
Which is quite interesting.
It is. I know. I've done some work there. It is interesting.
It's quite interesting because, you know, when I was in South Africa a long time ago, I went actually into a Polesmoor Prison.
Yes.
You know, people were doing some work there.
Yeah.
And I went in just to see what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I compare that to what happens in Brixton Prison.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's so much support.
Yeah.
There's so much support, Jim.
Sure.
You know, if people want to do some sort of course, they want to study.
That's right.
Sometimes they have trades they can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they get two people to a cell.
Mm.
You know, back home in South Africa, there's a lot of people to a cell.
Yeah.
There's less funding. That's what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was interesting as well.
Yes.
You know, I worked in a methadone clinic.
Oh, that's, yes. Yeah, I've dealt with clients with methadone.
Yeah, so that's also, back when I was in South Africa, we didn't really have that.
No.
Because it's all private.
Yeah,
that's right. And that's, I think that is happening there now. But here it's part of treatment.
Yes.
In certain instances.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? So that's been good. I've also started a new relationship.
Yeah.
Which has been wonderful.
Great.
You know, I've been going out for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, get along really well, have a lot in common. You know, she works in the field as well.
Does she? Yeah.
She's a transformational coach.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She helps people, Yeah. Get insights, move forward. She's really good with relationships.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's been wonderful.
Yeah.
Been able to travel.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
Been to was in Amsterdam. Been to Ireland a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really, really fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've been to the States 3 times.
Yes.
Which has just been just amazing.
Yeah.
And I remember I was actually there with my mom.
Oh,
and my aunt, and it was, you know, I remember we arrived, and we went over the Brooklyn Bridge on the tube.
Yeah, yeah.
And I turned around, and my mom looked at me, and she's like, "What was that?" And I was like, "I was just mesmerized."
Yeah,
it was just lovely to be in a place.
It is, you know? It happened with me for different. I mean, I didn't fly until I was 51.
Okay,
26 years into recovery.
Yeah,
because it was a fear of flying.
Yeah,
that my friends died in an air crash when I was 10 years old. But when I flew to America, I wanted to go there for so long. I know what you mean. I was.
It's just wonderful.
It's just fantastic.
Just to experience things.
Yeah, you know? That's right. Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Yeah, because
you see things.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it's not the same.
No,
but you have a bit more accessibility from the UK.
We do. We're very fortunate. Fortunate here, yeah.
And I suppose you know, myself being here, there've been just a lot of experiences.
Yes,
you know that I've been able to do. I remember I met some guy.
Yeah,
I was like, "Why don't we meet up?" He's like, "Oh, but a friend of us is playing in the band."
Yeah,
you know, and I was like, "Oh, that's cool. Well, that's fine. I'll some other time." And he was like, "You want to come to the band?"
Mm.
I was like,
yeah,
why not? You know, so I said, "Who's the band?"
Mm.
He said, "It's L7, which is a rock band."
Yes.
And he said, "No, they're friends of mine." I was like,
"Yeah."
And I can go. He was like, "Yeah, let's go." You know what I mean? It was just like
that's it. Yeah. It was
just a nice experience.
It's great. You know? Isn't it?
No, it's been so good.
We met in South Africa, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yes.
I don't know where. Was it the treatment centre?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
A while ago.
Just near a place called Scottborough.
Yes, yeah.
It's funny because that coast, what coast is that, the east coast or west coast?
I think it's the south coast.
South coast. Terrible on geography. But there's a couple of places called Margate and Ramsgate.
Yes.
And we have Margate and Ramsgate here on the Kent coast.
Yes, you do.
When I went to the Margate and Ramsgate in South Africa, it's kind of... Well, it was warmer. It
was just a little bit, Jim.
A little bit warmer and very soft, sandy beaches.
Mm.
I do like that ocean you have over there.
It is beautiful. Oh. It's a lovely place.
It is a lovely place.
It is a lovely place, you know.
The panorama and and the vastness of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, being there, I think the UK is, I don't know, it's about 250,000 square kilometers.
Yeah, yeah.
And South Africa is like something like 1.2 million.
Oh, is there?
there's a bit of discrepancy
in
the size,
you know,
of how big it is. But it is a wonderful place, you know. There's lots to do.
Yeah.
Like you said, lovely beaches.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great. Well, look, it's been a really wonderful experience interviewing you this afternoon for my 20th show. And your final choice of music is from South Africa, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So when I was a youngster, there's a guy called Johnny Clegg. And he had a band called
Savuka.
Yeah, so it's called Johnny Clegg and Savuka. There was something else.
All right.
But it means awakening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is Savuka.
Yeah.
And the song is Great Heart.
Yes.
So it's about a story about someone who's searching and says they can do things by themselves.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But they need a great heart to stand them by, to be with them. And just from my experience, you know, being in recovery, you know, being a human being on this planet,
you know,
that great heart I found in myself.
Sure.
You know, which is courage and love and strength.
Yeah.
But I've also found it in other people, you know.
Yes.
Other people, other communities that have helped me.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, you know, I met you in South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, and now later we meet up again.
18 years later.
I met someone else, you know, when I was in South Africa. He was there for the Football World Cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met up with him. We're still friends today.
Yeah.
And people have really shown me a lot of kindness.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of love, you know. Mm. And I really think it's because I'm clean, you know. I'm able to connect with people.
It is, yeah.
And have good relationships. And
yeah.
And the last bit on that, the great heart as well, is that energy, you know, that is everywhere, you know, whatever you want to call it.
That's it.
A power greater than.
Yes, you know, yes.
And it connects us all.
It connects us all.
Because we are not alone. You know?
The best thing to end was that it connects us all. Thanks, Lee. And we leave the final word to Johnny Clegg and Savuka. Thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Tim. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time. Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.